Today, central bank fest with a bias to cutting. Hello again, it's Martin Ellis from Digital Finance Analytics. I'm this post covering finance and problem news. This week is a real feast of central banker announcements, with the Bank of Canada and the Federal Reserve cutting today, and the Bank of England expected to hold tomorrow based on the hot inflation data which came out today. The UK is actually a bit of an outlier among advanced economies. In the US, inflation is below 3%. In the Eurozone, inflation is around the European Central Bank's 2% target. But in the UK, well, not so much. The latest data for August held inflation at the highest level in more than 1.5 years as consumer prices rose 3.8% from a year earlier. That's the same pace as July, according to the Office of National Statistics in the UK. Downward pressure from airfares, a notoriously volatile factor, was offset by motor fuel and prices at restaurants and hotels, with economists pointing to a possible effect from Oasis's concert tour. Food inflation, though, continued to rise, hitting 4.8%. That's the highest since early 2024, and we think there's more where that came from. Services inflation slowed to 4.7%, still above levels the Bank of England would be comfortable with. So while the labour market is gradually cooling, policymakers fear elevated price pressures are fueling inflation expectations among consumers. The central bank expects inflation to peak at 4% in September, double its 2% target. So the Monetary Policy Committee is expected to leave rates on hold at 4% tomorrow and could lay the groundwork for a longer pause in borrowing costs, ending the once a quarter cutting pace it's maintained since August last year. Markets expect rates to remain on hold actually this year and are only fully pricing one more reduction by the end of 2026. So inflation is sticky, and there seems no short-term relief in sight in the UK. Now, across in Canada, the Bank of Canada cut interest rates as the economy and labour markets showed damage from US tariffs, but they kept tight-lipped on any future path for monetary easing. Officials, led by Governor Tiff Macklem, cut the benchmark overnight rate by a quarter percentage point to 2.5% on Wednesday. That's the first reduction in borrowing costs since March this year.
Today, we lowered the policy interest rate by 25 basis points to 2.5%. Through the recent period of trade upheaval, Governing Council has been proceeding carefully, paying particular attention to the risks and uncertainties facing the Canadian economy. Three developments have shifted the balance of risks since our July decision. First, Canada's labour market has softened further. Second, although there are still some mixed signals, on balance, recent data suggest upward pressures on underlying inflation have diminished. And third, with the removal of most retaliatory tariffs by Canada, there is less upside risk to future inflation. Considerable uncertainty remains, but with a weaker economy and less upside risk to inflation, Governing Council judged that a reduction in the policy rate was appropriate to better balance the risks going forward. The bank will continue to assess the risks, look over a shorter horizon than usual, and be ready to respond to new information.
Officials pointed to mounting economic pressures, including a further softening of the country's labour market, and they said Prime Minister Mark Carney's removal of retaliatory tariffs on imports of some US goods had limited one potential source of inflation. Officials said they would be proceeding carefully, adding that disruptive effects of shifts in trade will continue to add to costs, even as they weigh on economic activity. Canada's economy actually shrank at a 1.6% annualized pace in the second quarter, which is roughly in line with the bank's expectations. The contraction was driven by a drop in export activity and business investment, and the bank said US levies and trade uncertainties were weighing heavily on economic activity. Policymakers downplayed still elevated core inflation pressures, saying the upward momentum in the bank's preferred trim and median measures had dissipated. Those gauges are running near a 3% yearly clip, but the bank says it sees broader underlying pressures closer to 2.5%, and wages pressures have continued to ease, the bank said. The Bank of Canada remains in a bind, it seems, as it weighs the upside risk to inflation against the downside risks to growth from the trade war. Moreover, Major fiscal stimulus is likely to be laid out in the federal budget this autumn, which will do most of the heavy lifting to support the economy in the near term. Now in the US, the Fed cut rates by the expected 25 basis points.
While the unemployment rate remains low, it has edged up. Job gains have slowed, and downside risks to employment have risen. At the same time, inflation has risen recently and remains somewhat elevated. In support of our goals, and in light of the shift in the balance of risks, today the Federal Open Market Committee decided to lower our policy interest rate by a quarter percentage point. We also decided to continue to reduce our securities holdings. I'll have more to say about monetary policy after briefly reviewing economic developments. Recent indicators suggest that growth of economic activity has moderated. GDP rose at a pace of around 1.5% in the first half of the year, down from 2.5% last year. The moderation in growth largely reflects a slowdown in consumer spending. In contrast, business investment in equipment and intangibles has picked up from last year's pace. Activity in the housing sector remains weak. In our summary of economic projections, the median participant projects GDP to rise 1.6% this year and 1.8% next year, a touch stronger than projected in June. In the labor market, the unemployment rate edged up to 4.3% in August, but remains little changed over the past year at a relatively low level. Payroll job gains have slowed significantly to a pace of just 29,000 per month over the past 3 months. A good part of the slowing likely reflects a decline in the growth of the labor force due to lower immigration and lower labor force participation. Even so, labor demand has softened, and the recent pace of job creation appears to be running below the break-even rate needed to hold the unemployment rate constant. In addition, wage growth has continued to moderate while still outpacing inflation. Overall, the marked slowing in both the supply of and demand for workers is unusual. In this less dynamic and somewhat softer labor market, the downside risks to employment appear to have risen. In our SEP, the median projection for the unemployment rate is 4.5% at the end of this year and edges down thereafter. Inflation has eased significantly from its highs in mid-2022, but remains somewhat elevated relative to our 2% longer-run goal. Estimates based on the Consumer Price Index and other data indicate that total PCE prices rose 2.7% over the 12 months ending in August, and that, excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 2.9%. These readings are higher than earlier in the year, as inflation for goods has picked up. In contrast, disinflation appears to be continuing for services. Near-term measures of inflation expectations have moved up, on balance, over the course of this year on news about tariffs, as reflected in both market and survey-based measures. Beyond the next year or so, however, most measures of longer-term expectations remain consistent with our 2% inflation goal. The median projection in the SEP for total PCE inflation is 3.0% this year and falls to 2.6% in 2026 and to 2.1% in 2027. Our monetary policy actions are guided by our dual mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people. At today's meeting, the committee decided to lower the target range for the federal funds rate by a quarter percentage point to 4 to 4.25%, and to continue reducing the size of our balance sheet. Changes to government policies continue to evolve, and their effects on the economy remain uncertain. Higher tariffs have begun to push up prices in some categories of goods, but their overall effects on economic activity and inflation remain to be seen. A reasonable base case is that the effects on inflation will be relatively short-lived, a one-time shift in the price level. But it is also possible that the inflationary effects could instead be more persistent, and that is a risk to be assessed and managed. Our obligation is to ensure that a one-time increase in the price level does not become an ongoing inflation problem. In the near term, risks to inflation are tilted to the upside and risks to employment to the downside, a challenging situation. When our goals are in tension like this, our framework calls for us to balance both sides of our dual mandate. With downside risks to employment having increased, the balance of risks has shifted. Accordingly, we judged it appropriate at this meeting to take another step toward a more neutral policy stance. With today's decision, we remain well-positioned to respond in a timely way to potential economic developments. We will continue to determine the appropriate stance of monetary policy based on the incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. In our SEP, FOMC participants wrote down their individual assessments of an appropriate path for the federal funds rate, based on what each participant judges to be the most likely scenario for the economy. The median participant projects that the appropriate level of the federal funds rate will be 3.6% at the end of this year, 3.4% at the end of 2026, and 3.1% at the end of 2027. This path is 0.25 percentage point lower than projected in June. As is always the case, these individual forecasts are subject to uncertainty, and they're not a committee plan or decision. Policy is not on a preset course. The Fed has been assigned two goals for monetary policy, maximum employment and stable prices. We remain committed to supporting maximum employment, bringing inflation sustainably to our 2% goal, and keeping longer-term inflation expectations well anchored. Our success in delivering on these goals matters to all Americans. We understand that our actions affect communities, families, and businesses across the country. Everything we do is in service to our public mission, and we at the Fed will do everything we can to achieve our maximum employment and price stability goals. Thank you.
Reacting to the weaker employment data and implicitly the pressure from the White House to cut and cut hard, and presumably new board member Stephen Miron, who wanted 50 basis points of cuts, according to the dot plot, which suggests a further two cuts this year and one next year. There was actually no real change to the economic forecast. The growth rate was up slightly, while the PCE inflation projections were unchanged for this year, but higher for the next year, up from 2.4% to 2.6%. They said inflation has moved up and remained higher. GDP was upgraded from prior projections. So it looks like the Fed is cutting into higher inflation, which poses the question, is this the Miron effect? Maybe as a Trump proxy, the spread of the dot plots is extremely wide. And there was only one dissent, which is perhaps surprising, given the 25 basis point cut. This despite the stronger retail sales figures earlier in the week and slightly hotter inflation, but nothing close to the UK's. One key question is this, is the key employment data the payroll data or the unemployment data? Who knows?
As you know, Fed Governor Stephen Miron kept his position at the White House, even as he's joined the Fed board. This is the first time, I believe, the Fed's board has had someone with executive branch ties in decades. Does this compromise the Fed's independence from day-to-day politics? And relatedly, how can you maintain the public's perception the Fed is politically independent with this dynamic? Thank you.
So we did welcome a new committee member today, as we always do. And the committee remains united in pursuing our dual mandate goals. We're strongly committed to maintaining our independence, and beyond that, I really don't have anything to share.
Okay, and then just as a quick follow-up, I'm sorry, you and other Fed officials have spoken extensively about the impact of tariffs on inflation, although perhaps with many companies appearing to eat the tariffs, tariffs may be impacting the labor market and other parts of the economy instead. Do you see that as a possible outcome here, that tariffs are the reason we're seeing some slowing, particularly in the labor market, rather than in inflation? Thank
you. You know, it's certainly possible. You know, we have begun to see goods prices showing through into higher inflation. And actually, the increase in goods prices accounts for most of the increase in inflation, or perhaps all of the increase in inflation over the course of this year. Those are not very large effects at this point. And we do expect them to continue to build over the course of the rest of the year and into next year. And, you know, it's also possible that there may be effects on employment, but That I would say if you're looking at why employment is doing what it's doing, that's much more about the change in immigration. So the supply of workers has obviously come way down. There's very little growth, if any, in the supply of workers. And at the same time, demand for workers has also come down quite sharply, to the point where we see what I've called a curious balance. It's, you know, typically when we say things are in balance, that sounds good. But in this case, the balance is because both supply and demand have come down quite sharply. Now demand coming down a little more sharply because we now see the unemployment rate edging up.
Are you about the slowdown in the jobs market for households at home, especially younger Americans struggling to land a job?
So it's an interesting labor market, and obviously we think it's appropriate that we reduce our rates so that we become more neutral, which presumably will be better for the labor market. You see people who are sort of more at the margins, so kids coming out of college and younger people, minorities are having a hard time finding jobs. The overall job finding rate is very, very low. However, the layoff rate is also very low. So you've got a low hiring environment. And the concern is that if you start to see layoffs, the people who are laid off won't be a lot of hiring going on. So that could very quickly flow into higher unemployment. In a healthier economy, healthier labor market, there would be jobs for those people. But now the hiring rate is very, very low. So that's been a growing concern over the last few months. And it's one of the reasons why we think it's appropriate that we begin to shift our policy focus toward a more balanced one.
And there was a very interesting question about whether, in fact, these targets and projections that the Federal Reserve makes are really that meaningful.
Every year since 2015, the SEP has forecast that you would hit your target 2 years later. And this year, this SEP says you're going to hit your target 2 years later. 2% does not seem to be in sight. Does that suggest that the 2% target is not really achievable? And does this present any credibility problems for you in telling people that that's what you're going to do if you can never reach it?
Well, I mean, you're right. It does say we're going to get to 2% inflation in 2028, at the end of 28. But that's, you know, that's literally how you put the projections together. You're writing down a rate path, which is designed to create, over the course of the SEP, you know, time frame, 2% inflation and maximum employment too. So that's all that is. You know, no one really knows where the economy will be in 3 years. But the nature of the exercise is to write down policy that you believe would return to the 2% goal over at least by the end of the exercise.
Anyway, as a result, the US dollar fell on the announcement, and I think we can see Trump's shadow cast on the Fed. Now, in Australia, chances of a September interest rate cut by Australia's Federal Reserve will hinge on the release of the national employment figures due out today. The RBA's next call on interest rates is just weeks away on September the 30th and follows three previous cuts in 2025, with the most recent 0.25% reduction in August, which took the cash rate to 3.6% for the first time since April 2023. Now, while cuts have been welcomed by Aussies with mortgages, those searching for a home are perhaps praying the RBA holds, because further cuts will likely fuel further price growth in an Australian property market that has already put previous affordability options well out of reach for many Aussies. Despite initial widespread predictions of another cut in September, that sentiment has been cooling as Australia's economy continues to strengthen. Lowering inflation, increasing wages, and stable employment have all reduced pressures on the RBA to cut again before the end of the year. But EQ Economics Managing Director Warren Hogan told Sky News Australia that Thursday's employment update could be the deciding factor ahead of the RBA September meeting. "I think the unemployment rate is the key this week for the RBA," he said. "It's pretty clear what the other central banks around the world are doing. They are near the end of their easing cycle." So as for the Australian situation, who knows? And standing back, well, we've had a real feast. It does seem to me that we should expect some cuts from the RBA, but not many. We probably won't get anything from the UK. And clearly the Fed is now in major cutting mode. We live in very interesting times. But my point is that the process of central banks setting interest rates and their modeling, which consistently gets moved around because the data gets moved around, is, to my mind, a bit pointless. And I have to say that I am not convinced that central banks and their interest rate setting policies really make a lot of sense. No accountability, of course, if they get it wrong. And at the end of the day, they seem to me to just kick out the target again and again. Perhaps we should pause and ask the question, are central banks' monetary policy settings appropriate? And do we really need them? Well, that's probably above my pay grade, but I'm not sure. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.